Thomas Rosetto with us, his book, Living the Paradox of Enlightenment. Let's talk a little bit about kindness and how far that'll go when we take your calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. Thomas Rosetto with us, George Norrie along here with Coast to Coast. And if you need anything, just go to our website at coasttocoastam.com. Thomas, kindness, how far does that go?
How do you mean that?
Well, the kinder you are, is it infectious or does it not work?
Oh, it can be infectious, but what's interesting is that sometimes it won't work in the way you expect. Like, I've had roommates that they just didn't like me. I don't know why. I was as kind to them as I could possibly be, and it never turned the tide. So I figured, well, the kindest thing for me to do is to leave. So I did. Huh. In that sense, that act of kindness brought more peace to her because she didn't like having me around, so I left. That wasn't a romantic relationship. That was just a roommate situation, and I thought it would be easy to, she would see that, I'm a good guy, but it just never came around. And I was a little bit surprised, but I guess I said to myself, well, I guess you don't always create the exact relationship that you think is right there. You were talking about visualizing how a relationship might unfold. So it may or may not go to where you think it would go, but don't stop being kind. And, selfishness is a result of a closed heart, but to be healthy and happy, you need an open heart. So it's very important to be kind because you will be more vibrant. You will be, you'll be healthier. It'll nurture you as the people. It'll also nurture the people around you.
I see. I think the kinder you are, the more infectious it becomes. And, you might be kind to person X, and I think that person eventually will be kind to somebody else.
Ah, yes, yes. And you brought up some interesting stories about you and Tommy going to the grocery store and buying groceries for people.
Yes, Tommy does that. He will look at somebody in line. And whatever, I'm not calling it profiling, but he'll make a decision who he wants to buy for, and he'll tell the cashier that, and off he goes.
And that makes you feel good, but you don't do it to make yourself feel good. You do it because you want to help others and make the world a better place. And it has this side effect of making you a better person, making you feel good, and like you said, the spark just goes out and spreads and goes, and that person goes, "Guys, somebody did something nice for me. I can do something nice for someone else," And when you do it for someone that absolutely can't pay you back, and one time you told a story about a guy breaking down in his car, and he was in high school, and a car drove by and stopped, and a couple of guys got out and went and looked at him and said, "Hey, here's $10. Get you home, won't it?" He says, "How do I get it back to you?" He says, "Oh, don't worry about it," and two of the guys get back in the car. Do you remember this story?
Mm-hmm.
I told you enough? Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Turns out the next day there's a brand new car in the guy's driveway because the guy in the limo that went by was Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Now, that is one of the greatest stories I ever heard on Coast to Coast.
Yep.
It's just an act of kindness. The guy is going to have no way to pay you back, but it's like, I can do this. It's going to make the world a better place. I'm going to do it. And he's going to go and tell that story. And just hearing the story on Coast to Coast is going to let millions of people be inspired by that story and say, I can help that guy.
Well, the great part of kindness, Thomas, is not to be rewarded back for being kind.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, it's such a beautiful thing to just share without asking for anything in return. And I remember when I heard Stevie Wonder sing, "True love asks for nothing. Her acceptance is the way we pay." And I thought, that's so beautiful.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Joe in Monterey, California to get things started. Joseph, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Tommy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm going to do my best to be kind when I say these things. I know a lot of New Age rhetoric. I've been meditating for many, many years. How long have you been meditating? I mean, what spiritual attainment through meditation, some kind of meditation, because you can purify yourself through the light, as you know, and other forms of meditation. George had out-of-body experiences, and that's an eye-opener right there. Other people have other experiences. How can you account for what you know other than reading books, through meditation or some kind of spiritual practice?
Well, I started, I would say my spiritual practices started when I was a little boy in grade school. I just fell in love with the idea of God. I was being raised Catholic. I was being told that God takes care of us and looks after us. And I went, wow, this is fantastic. You know, I really like this idea. And when I was in grade school, I wanted to be a priest. Now I kind of outgrew the Catholic Church. And so I see myself as a priest in a way, but I'm certainly not a Catholic priest. But after that, I probably stepped away from the church around 20 years old, something like that. And shortly thereafter, well, maybe not that shortly, but I found those channeled books by Jane Roberts and Seth. I had not yet started to meditate at that point, but a little bit later, I don't know how old I was, oh, I don't know, 20, late 20s, I met a meditation teacher and I started to work with that. And they taught me meditation, and it grew to a fairly large number of people, and it seemed to work pretty good, and I never stopped. I mean, daily meditation is a regular thing.
Are you a believer in extraterrestrial life, Thomas?
I do. It's one of those subjects I dug in and dug in and dug in, and then I finally threw my hands up and said, I'm not getting any further. I think there's something to this. I can't say what it is. I found the Sitchin material to be fascinating, and at the same time, I also said some of this sounds like it's metaphorical, but I look at our physical bodies, our human bodies, and how we don't have claws and big teeth and tough hides, and I mean, we don't seem to be too well prepared for dealing with the environment that we would be in, you know, and yet somehow we're here, and also I look at the fact that birth is fairly painful for humans, right, compared to like, say, like a zebra out on the plain that gives birth, and as soon as they do that, the mother and the baby have to get up and run from the lion. You know what I mean? You see how different that is? So that makes me wonder, you know, if we were kind of put together genetically in a way that's not quite, how shall I say this, fully naturally evolving, do you know what I mean? It kind of makes me wonder, maybe there really is something to these ideas that somebody's been fiddling around with their DNA. And I think the book that really got me going on that, I think I read it just after high school or in high school, was J. Allen Hynek's book, The UFO Experience, where he stepped it through the different stages. Remember, was it Close Encounters of the First Kind, Second Kind, Third Kind? I don't know if you remember that book.
But, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And the book started off with daylight sightings, nighttime sightings, all that kind of stuff, and just graduated from, you know, the least sensational thing to finally Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where there's a craft and a being and witnesses and radar and all this stuff. So I just go, wow. And if the cover-up is that good to still have us doubt whether or not there are extraterrestrials in a general sense, I mean, it's really, because when I took my eye off the ball, when I no longer looked into that subject, it seemed to just disappear. People just didn't talk about it, unless you went to the group of people that were talking about it, and then they were talking about it quite a bit. So it is a very interesting question.
When you were doing the work on Harry Houdini, Harry was obsessed with the afterlife, wasn't he?
He was. His mother passed away. He was friends with the Arthur, he was friends with Sir Conan Doyle, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, right? That's how you say it.
That's right.
He wrote the books of Sherlock Holmes, but he was married to, I think we would call her a spiritualist.
That was Bess, wasn't it?
Yeah, an automatic writer kind of person. And Harry was trying to get in touch with his mother through these types of people, but he also was a magician. And he was very cynical, and he would find frauds. And there were many frauds.
Many frauds. Drove him nuts.
No question. But there were also true ones, good ones. And in my opinion, he got in the way of some of the investigations of the good ones. Right off the top of my head, I don't know if I can remember her name, but she was a channel that was being investigated by Scientific America, if I remember correctly, and they were going to hand her an award of like $10,000. And Houdini shows up and says, no, wait a minute. I can fake all these things that she's doing, or I can replicate them, not fake them, but you know what I mean. And he was able to stop that process and prevent that prize. But it was really funny because it was a story that was told about him. They would put her in a box. It would, you know what I'm saying? A kind of a box where her head would stick out of a hole.
Yeah.
And it would restrict her hands and feet and everything. And she was supposed to, there was a buzzer in there, like a doorbell buzzer that was supposed to be rung by the spirit. And they were tying her hands so that she could not touch the buzzer. And yet Houdini put something in there like, he sabotaged the buzzer so that if
on purpose.
It didn't ring.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so when the spirit came in, the spirit saw Houdini and said, oh, Houdini, you're here again. Disappointed. And then they said, push
that
the button.
Them.
And the spirit said, I can't. Houdini prevented it from working. And so they turned the lights on, they opened it up, and the guy looked at it and found the little piece of rubber or whatever was in there, took it out. They looked at Houdini and said, don't do that again. Put it all back together and said to the spirit, okay, push the button. And the spirit is like pushing the button, and it's going, burp, burp, burp. There, is that good enough for you? It's a really funny story.
Back to the phones. Let's go to Johnny in St. Louis, Missouri. Welcome to the show. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. I just flipped on. I'm a limo driver in St. Louis, and I just dropped people off downtown, and I flipped the program on, and you said you were talking about kindness. And this is where we're at in this society. That everywhere you go, we know the problems in every major city, and it's got to be our way of life. You see so many people, homeless people on the street everywhere you go. I have a close friend in East St. Louis, and every day I'm over there, and there's certain people at this Safeway, Save-A-Lot, when I stop, and I buy them a couple bottles of water, and I give them $2. Four or five times a week I do this, and there's a guy named Hobo on the corner, and recognizes my car, and he comes running up, and I stop.
You're his savior.
And you know, this is the key. We're the key to each other, because what we do for them, we do for us, and it's in the giving that we receive. And this is our language, and this is who we are, and this is what we are, because what we do for another, we do for ourselves. And I'm so grateful for George and Coast to Coast and the family of the world, the family of man that we are and that you are. And thank you for what you're doing and reminding us, because this is a path out. Jesus said, I am the way. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. I'm the way. The way is giving. The way is love. The way is an open heart. The open heart is the key to heaven. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, John. Appreciate that.
And John, Jesus said, what you do to the least of my brothers is what you do to me.
What's so important, though, Thomas, is to be able to give. Let me tell you a funny story that happened to me, too. I try to help as many people as I can, and I don't expect anything back in return,
mm-hmm.
Nothing. And one of my pet peeves happens to be the plight of homeless.
Yeah.
I just can't believe it. Here in L.A., as a matter of fact, as you well know, people sleep on the sidewalk at night. Mm-hmm. On the sidewalk, they're there. And the nation, with as much wealth that we have, we should be doing something for these people.
Yes.
I mean, it's unfortunate that they're in the position they're in, but don't let them sleep on a sidewalk, for crying out loud. But, I will help them out. I'll give them money, and, sometimes I will do it just to see the look on their face. I'll give somebody $100, and you would think I gave them $1 million.
Exactly.
And, I mean, they go nuts. But this is the strange part about it. I do it not expecting anything other than a smile from the other person. That, to me, is the ultimate reward for that.
Yeah.
But all the time when I do this, I end up getting $500 back or $1,000. On the day I did it to a guy who was at the post office, he was sitting there with his wife on the ground with a sign, and I gave him $100. And I went to my P.O. box, opened it up, and there was a $1,500 check from my insurance company. How does this happen?
Yeah,
who's doing this for us?
You know, Seth talks about that happening in Framework 2, which is the unseen framework above the physical world, where coincidences, which really aren't coincidences, set up.
They're all set up. It's fate.
Yeah, and if we have time, I'd like to tell a very quick story.
Yeah, go ahead. We'll do that, and then we've got another half hour of phone calls to go to.
Okay. I happened to be in Santa Barbara, and I was over by the gas station, and I was just walking. And I saw somebody over there, and he was homeless, and he had his head down, and I could tell he didn't have any shoes. So I went over, and I just said, "Hey, man, are you okay?" Now, I used to say things like, sir, but I decided it's a little more connection if you just be, you know, "Hey, man, are you okay?" He picks his head up, and he smiles. He goes, "No, I'm doing fine." And I go, "Oh, that's good to hear. Hey, I see you don't have any shoes. What size do you wear?" And he knew what I was getting at. And he goes, "Hey, man, I don't want your shoes. Somebody just stole mine." And I said, "What size do you wear?" And he told me, and, you know, my shoes would be way too small. He wouldn't be able to get them on. But I didn't give him anything, but I gave him respect, you know?
That's right.
And if I do give someone money, because then I didn't have any money, but if I do give someone, you know, they might say, "Hey, man, do you have a buck?" And I say, "You know, you can't get much with a buck. Here's five." And I look him in the eye, and that's the important point. You got to give him respect. They're your brother. They're not a leech in society. They're not a problem. They're our friends. They're our brothers. They're our sisters.
They were just dealt the wrong cards.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever reason.
Yep.
Some of them are addicts. Some of them have medical issues.
Exactly. And I learned that, too, sometimes, because I gave somebody some money, and he looked like he was pretty drunk. And as soon as I gave him the money, he just made a U-turn and headed right back to that liquor store.
But we should be, you know, finding out how many homeless there are and putting shelters together, building them, you know, special cities for people like that somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We should do something. Let's go back to the calls. Ian's in New Jersey. Welcome to the show. Hi, Ian. You with us? Nope. Let's go to Miat in New York. Hey, Miat.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Excellent program.
Thank you.
I want to, and a point of clarification as I listen over the air. Mention those books of Hynek, because there's an author called Rita Come Home. That's part of the problem. People via, you know, the internet and social media aren't reading books. But I want to connect this to a program a couple days ago that Richard had with William H. Brown, which blew me away. And somehow there is a reality, Thomas, that's beyond the way we think of it, because it came up that he was an attorney in the late 1890s that actually in these books, his name was Ingersoll Lockwood, and actually he described the current political climate, the adventures and travels of Barron Trump, the last president, and what we're dealing with right now. So my question is people just don't seem to be coping. So I want you to elaborate on some practical issues. Those who have, Joe brought up meditation.
All right, we're going to do that when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Tomorrow, our special anniversary program in memory of those victims of 9/11. My God, I can't believe it's been 18 years, but we'll be doing that tomorrow for the first half of the program with Richard Gage, one of the architects of who believes that there's something else afoot here. George Norrie back with you. It's 41 minutes after the hour. That's going by fast tonight. Thomas Rosetto with us. His book is called Living the Paradox of Enlightenment. My aunt's question from New York, of course, Thomas, was she feels as if, and rightfully so, everything seems to be in flux, up and down. It's going crazy. You feel that,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, I do. And she also, just to take a quick little side, she also asked about that Hynek book, to mention the title again. J. Allen Hynek, The UFO Experience. That's the name of that book. And I I think I read it around 1972, so maybe you can find a copy. Now, back to your point about this uneasiness and this dynamic and all these changes that are so unpredictable and hard to cope with. I think that's the word she used, trying to find a way to cope with these things. And again, it goes back to just trying to find something positive in an experience. Now, if you can't, don't say, well, you know, this process doesn't work or whatever. Just say, I can't find anything positive in this particular experience. But keep trying to find positive things in all your experiences and focus on that rather than on the negative. And that might help you cope.
Let's go back to the calls. Let's go to Charles in San Jose, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Charles. Good morning.
Hi, George, and hi, Tom.
Hi there.
If everyone adopted this be nice, be meditative, be positive attitude, if everyone was extremely nice to each other, everybody, it still would not put a dent in the school shootings and the violence we're experiencing as a nation. There is something deep, dark, and wrong with our society. And even a religion won't save us. Even a belief in God won't save us. We're hiding on this conversation, George, behind the 45-second delay under the pretense of free speech. The big stuff never gets out. But I want to give one person a challenge.
All right.
Tomorrow, the anniversary of 9/11, I dare Stephen King to broach the subject of John Lennon.
Off he goes again.
Let's just work with his point, though. And let's take something that's quite difficult to talk about. Let's talk about war very quickly. One time a woman came up to Bashar, and he's the one, the channeled entity from Sri Lanka, who's been, I think he started in L.A., he's been channeling for over 30 years. I saw him in Santa Barbara more than 30 years ago. Anyway, this woman asked about war. She said, these wars, we want these wars? We are choosing these wars? And he replied, no, you are not choosing war specifically, per se. But you are choosing beliefs that lead to war, and you don't see the connection. So I'll just leave that, and people can maybe dig into that a little bit more.
Tom in the Bronx, welcome to the show. Lots of calls from the Bronx tonight. Hey, Thomas, go ahead.
Talk about the homeless. And what I would say this, that California needs a new political party name, and it would be the State Preservation Party. When there was a party name in New York City by the name of Neighborhood Preservation Party, the year that came out was that more people voted on that name in New York City, unknown name. It was brought out by our governor, Cuomo, the father of the present Cuomo,
and Mario,
and somebody. And if you talk to the insurance companies or other companies, there is a possibility. You tell them you start a new political party by the name of the State Preservation Party. There's a lot of people would be drawn to vote for that label, I'm telling you, because I had put out an advertisement years ago called
That's all right, Tom. We don't need the name of your magazine. So what's your point, though, Tom?
Yeah, well, in other words, it would help out. It would help out by giving people money. It doesn't help them. They go buy drugs with it or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
By creating, they had opened the shelters and everything else, and there's a lot of people, 60,000 people a night live in the shelters in New York City. It seems Los Angeles needs a story like that. And
well, they sure do. They better do it soon enough because it's out of control, Thomas, isn't it?
Yeah, it's... it's a difficult problem to deal with, but we really have to deal with the full creative process, the core beliefs, the emotions, and the actions. We can't just try to keep changing things with action. We have to change core beliefs. It's kind of like if you look in the mirror and you see that your hair is messed up, you don't get a comb and stick it into the mirror and try and comb your hair. You have to go to the source of it. You have to go to the core beliefs.
We've got George in Corpus Christi, Texas. Welcome to the show. Hi, George. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I'm going to reiterate what I said once before. I think Tesla and Marconi are watching over you all the time because this would be a great show here. Anyways, my question is, you know, I always have to write these down. Are we in constant redemption mode, thus reincarnation, to achieve higher consciousness? And, you know, as you talked about the other societies, other people, other living beings in the universe, well, they must be at a level, at a higher consciousness where they can be at their most kindness and their most generous and their most egalitarian and all that is good in the world. So as us as humans, are we like always in redemption mode just to achieve that higher consciousness? And what is free will? What is your guest think of free will? And thank you, George. I'll take my answer on the radio.
What do you think of free will?
You, as source awareness, are the source of everything, this spontaneous expression, unbounded. Now that is free will. And then even further down, you have the soul, who's expressing the soul's free will as choosing your parents and the circumstances of your birth, but not choosing every little specific choice that's going to be made by the person. That's made by the free will of the person. So we can look at the three different levels. There's the very top, open awareness, spontaneous expression, unbounded, the soul choosing general themes, and then the more specific things that happen. In fact, Bashar makes an analogy like your soul can choose that you're going to go down a particular hall for your life. But once you're born, you can choose whether to go slowly down the hall, to fly down the hall, to walk backwards down the hall, to investigate every little nook and cranny in the hall. So free will is expressed in many ways, and it's perfectly fine to talk about it all. And yet some people would say, well, ultimately, the person has no free will because it's being spontaneously sourced in source awareness. You know, it's just a different way of expressing it. I would say that I like to be very functional and practical in the world. So if I say to you, George, do you want to do something? I'm appealing to the free will of your person. And yet your free will is somewhat limited. You can't just push a button and take care of all those homeless people. If you had infinitely powerful free will, that would happen. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Steve's with us now in Casa Grande de Arizona. Steve, go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you been?
Okay, Stephen, thank you.
You remember me? I'm the Elvis.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I miss you. I want to ask you, too, is that a yearly thing in Laughlin?
It could be.
If you're not sure yet, yeah, because I wanted to check that out again next year whenever that comes back up.
They haven't come to us yet, but it could be an annual event.
Cool. You know, on the point of what you guys were talking about, I was thinking about, it seems like you were saying, you know, about think there's something missing. And I feel like there's like low morale. Like if the United States was like a corporation and it's like, we're all employees of it. And it's almost like, we got really low morale. It just seems like, everybody's kind of depressed. Like I don't know if it's because of the computers, maybe because everybody's just on their phone. Everybody's looking at their phones all the time. And that's what I've been noticing.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is that if this was a corporation, we would need the CEO to give a speech to see if he could inspire some enthusiasm.
There you go. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and so how would you do that? You know, like Oprah has a saying, like, live your best life, you know? And so if you can go to someone and say, are you really doing the best you can? Are you really putting a smile on your face? Because that's going to make you feel better, but it's also going to make you Other people that are near you are going to go, I like being around this person. They're happy most of the time. Most people are like that. Some people don't like to be around happy people. But anyway, if you can inspire people to be happier, they're going to act different. They're going to act more kind. And they're going to be more enthused. And they're going to try some things that they may not have tried before in business and love and with their friends. Be more adventurous.
Well, I got to tell you too, Thomas, that that earlier caller who talked about the, if you could even build a utopia, there's still going to be violence and stuff. Do you think he's right?
No. I think that you, this is a very touchy question. I think that you can choose whether or not you believe that you personally will be a victim, whether you will experience your experiences as if they happened to you without your control. And once you wake up to the conscious creation process, again, all three, core beliefs, emotions, and actions, all in alignment, all working together, you will no longer experience things as I was a victim of this and I was a victim of that. You can say something came forward and I found something positive in it. You've heard people say, I could be a sports person that gets injured or a normal person that gets sick, really sick, and they'll say something that'll totally shock you. Go, this was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I'm like, wow, how can they say that? But they do, you know, not all of them, you know, but some people can go that far as defining a positive attitude.
Let's go to Mark in Baltimore, Maryland. Welcome to the program, Mark. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, George.
Thank you.
Yes. On meditation, I've meditated. It took me 2 years to master it, and I've had a couple of out-of-body experiences.
Wow.
For me, that was like the pinnacle of it, you know, when I got to that point. And so, like, my sister, she's kind of skeptical in life, so I told her, listen, Suzanne, you can do anything you want if you believe in it. That's the key. You have to believe in something that you want to do. If you don't believe you can do it, you're not going to do it. Because that, to me, the mental part is half the battle. What do you think about that?
I'd back off from that a little bit. I would say, don't stop trying. Try. But we don't know whether you can do it or not. We don't know which tennis player is going to win the match. They both aren't going to. Only one. So we don't know what's going to happen. So I would back off just a little bit. And this idea that you can be, do, and have whatever you want. I mean, sometimes you'd say, well, wouldn't we act like little children and say, we want candy for dinner every day, and we want ice cream for dessert. Well, we might not be, as a person, wise enough to choose what we want. So this is what Bashar is saying about your soul making some choices for you to work within so that it can keep the whole thing kind of healthy and moving forward to a greater understanding of how you don't need to fear an open heart, how you can share your love without fearing that it's going to hurt you.
Joe in the Bronx, take it away, Joseph.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good, Joe.
Good. Hey, and Thomas, I'd like to know, what is your perception of heaven, and what do you think the purpose of reincarnation is?
Heaven and reincarnation, we've got less than 2 minutes left, Thomas.
Okay. I don't think that heaven is a place or that hell is a place, but I do believe that, say, for example, you're driving on the freeway and something happens and somebody gets really upset at somebody else and they say, yeah, you should go to hell. Well, you know who has just gone to hell is the person that's proclaiming that. They've sent themselves into hell right there and then.
Fire and brimstone.
Yeah, they've sent themselves into this emotional experience. It's really a mess. It's really difficult to deal with. They put themselves there. Now, heaven is similar but opposite. You know, if someone really knows how to, when they really figure out that all the circumstances in their lives have absolutely no control over their own emotional state of being, and that they can choose to be happy. I don't mean jumping up and down, enthusiastic, happy every moment, but just dwell in this bliss. You dwell in this bliss. You're at peace. You're available for kindness and compassion. This is considered the four abodes that the Buddhists talk about. And this is like dwelling in heaven, because you know that if you encounter a situation where it's time to be kind, that it's available and you don't have to fear putting that kindness into play. So it was heaven. The two questions, two points of the question was heaven.
And we're out of time, my friend.
Ah.
It was reincarnation. Do you believe in it? Yes or no?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
All right. Great. Thanks, Thomas. Appreciate you being on the program. The book, Living the Paradox of Enlightenment. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrow, Stimbenall, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.